Professor Huxley and G.H. Lewes, the consort of George Eliot, were invited to cooperate, but both refused, Huxley stating in his reply that supposing the phenomena to be genuine, they do not interest me, a dictum which showed that this great and clear-headed man had his limitations. The six subcommittees sat fortitudes under test conditions, often without the aid of a professional medium, and with a full sense of responsibility they agreed that the following points appeared to have been established. 1. That sounds of a very varied character, apparently proceeding from articles of furniture, the floor and walls of the room are the vibrations accompanying which sounds are often distinctly perceptible to the touch air occurred, without being produced by muscular action or mechanical contrivance. 2. That movements of heavy bodies take place without mechanical contrivance of any kind or adequate exertion of muscular force by the persons present, and frequently without contact or connection with any person. 3. That these sounds and movements often occur at the times and in the manner asked for by persons present, and, by means of a simple code of signals, answer questions and spell out coherent communications. 4. That the answers and communications thus obtained are, for the most part, of a commonplace character, but facts are sometimes correctly given which are only known to one of the persons present. 5. That the circumstances under which the phenomena occur are variable, the most prominent fact being that the presence of certain persons seems necessary to their occurrence, and that of others generally adverse, but this difference does not appear to depend upon any belief or disbelief concerning the phenomena. 6. That, nevertheless, the occurrence of the phenomena is not ensured by the presence or absence of such persons respectively. The report briefly summarizes as follows the oral and written evidence received, which not only testifies to phenomena of the same nature as those witnessed by the subcommittees, but to others of a more varied and extraordinary character. 1. 13 witnesses state that they have seen heavy bodies in some instances mana rise slowly in the air and remain there for some time without visible or tangible support. 2. 14 witnesses testify to having seen hands or figures, not appertaining to any human being, but lifelike in appearance and mobility, which they have sometimes touched or even grasped, and which they are therefore convinced were not the result of imposture or illusion. 3. 5 witnesses state that they have been touched by some invisible agency on various parts of the body, and often were requested, when the hands of all present were visible. 4. 13 witnesses declare that they have heard musical pieces well played upon instruments not manipulated by any ascertainable agency. 5. 5 witnesses state that they have seen red-hot coals applied to the hands or heads of several persons without producing pain or scorching, and 3 witnesses state that they have had the same experiment made upon themselves with the like immunity. 6. 8 witnesses state that they have received precise information through wrappings, writings, and in other ways, the accuracy of which was unknown at the time to themselves or to any persons present, and which on subsequent inquiry was found to be correct. 7. 1 witness declares that he has received a precise and detailed statement which, nevertheless, proved to be entirely erroneous. 8. 3 witnesses state that they have been present when drawings, both in pencil and colors, were produced in so short a time, and under such conditions as to render human agency impossible. 9. 6 witnesses declare that they have received information of future events, and that in some cases the hour and minute of their occurrence have been accurately foretold, days and even weeks before. In addition to the above, evidence was given of trance speaking, of healing, of automatic writing, of the introduction of flowers and fruits into closed rooms, of voices in the air, of visions in crystals and glasses, and of the elongation of the human body. The report closes with the following observations. In presenting their report, your committee, taking into consideration the high character and great intelligence of many of the witnesses to the more extraordinary facts, the extent to which their testimony is supported by the reports of the subcommittees, and the absence of any proof of imposture or delusion as regards a large portion of the phenomena, and further, having regard to the exceptional character of the phenomena, the large number of persons in every grade of society and over the whole civilized world who are more or less influenced by a belief in their supernatural origin, and to the fact that no philosophical explanation of them has yet been arrived at, deem it incumbent upon them to state their conviction that the subject is worthy of more serious attention and careful investigation than it has hitherto received. Among those who gave evidence or read papers before the committee were Dr. Alfred Russel Wallace, Mrs. Emma Harding, Mr. H. D. Jenkin, Mr. Benjamin Coleman, Mr. Cromwell F. Varley, Mr. D. D. Home, and the Master of Lindsay. Correspondence was received from Lord Eton, Mr. Robert Chambers, Dr. Garth Wilkinson, Mr. William Howitt, M. Camille Flammarion, and others. The committee was successful in procuring the evidence of believers in the phenomena, but almost wholly failed, as stated in its report, to obtain evidence from those who attributed them to fraud or delusion. In the records of the evidence of over 50 witnesses, there is voluminous testimony to the existence of the facts from men and women of good standing. One witness considered that the most remarkable phenomenon brought to light by the labors of the committee was the extraordinary number of eminent men who were shown to be firm believers in the spiritual hypothesis. And another declared that whatever agencies might be employed in these manifestations, they were not to be explained by referring them to imposture on the one side or hallucination on the other. An interesting sidelight on the growth of the movement is obtained from Mrs. Emma Harding's statement that at that time, 1869, she knew only two professional mediums in London, though she was acquainted with several non-professional ones. As she herself was a medium, she was probably correct in what she said. Mr. Cromwell Varley averred that there were probably not more than 100 known mediums in the whole kingdom, and he added that very few of those were well developed. We have here conclusive testimony to the great work accomplished in England by D. D. Home, for the bulk of the converts were due to his mediumship. Another medium who played an important part was Mrs. Marshall. Many witnesses spoke of evidential sittings they had attended at her house. Mr. William Howitt, the well-known author, was of opinion that spiritualism had then received the assent of about 20 millions of people in all countries after personal examination. What may be called the evidence for the opposition was not at all formidable. Lord Lytton said that in his experience the phenomena were traceable to material influences of whose nature we were ignorant. Dr. Carpenter brought out his pet hobby of unconscious cerebration. Dr. Kidd thought that the majority were evidently subjective phenomena, and three witnesses, while convinced of the genuineness of the occurrences, ascribed them to satanic agency. These objections were well answered by Mr. Thomas Shorter, author of Confessions of a Truth Seeker, and secretary of the Working Men's College, in an admirable review of the report in the Spiritual Magazine. It is worthy of note that on the publication of this important and well-considered report it was ridiculed by a large part of the London press. An honorable exception was the Spectator. The Times Reviewer considered it nothing more than a farrago of impotent conclusions, garnished by a mass of the most monstrous rubbish it has ever been our misfortune to sit in judgment upon. The Morning Post said, "The report which has been published is entirely worthless." The Saturday Review hoped that report would involuntarily lead to discrediting a little further one of the most unequivocally degrading superstitions that have ever found currency among reasonable beings. The Standard made a sound criticism that deserves to be remembered. Objecting to the remark of those who do not believe in spiritualism, yet say that there may be something in it, the newspaper sagely observes, "If there is anything whatever in it beyond imposture and imbecility, there is the whole of another world in it." The Daily News regarded the report as an important contribution to the literature of a subject which, someday or other, by the very number of its followers, will demand more extended investigation. The Spectator, after describing the book as an extremely curious one, added, "Few, however, could read the mass of evidence collected in this volume, showing the firm faith in the reality of the alleged spiritual phenomena possessed by a number of individuals of honorable and upright character, without also agreeing with Mr. Jeffrey's opinion that the remarkable phenomena witnessed, some of which had not been traced to imposture or delusion, and the gathered testimony of respectable witnesses, justify the recommendation of the subject to further cautious investigation. These are but brief extracts from long notices in a few of the London newspapers, so there were many others, and, bad as they are, they nonetheless indicate a change of attitude on the part of the press, which had been in the habit of ignoring the subject altogether. It must be remembered that the report concerned itself only with the phenomenal aspect of spiritualism, and this, in the opinion of leading spiritualists, is decidedly the less important side. Only in the report of one subcommittee is it recorded that the general gist of the messages was that physical death was a trivial matter in retrospect, but that for the spirit it was a rebirth into new experiences of existence, that spirit life was in every respect human, that friendly intercourse was as common and pleasurable as in life, that although spirits took great interest in worldly affairs, they had no wish to return to their former state of existence, that communication with earth friends was pleasurable and desired by spirits, being intended as a proof to the former of the continuance of life in spite of bodily dissolution, and that spirits claimed no certain prophetic power. These were the main heads of the information received. It will be generally recognized in the future that in their day and generation, the Dialectical Society's committee did excellent work. The great majority of the members were opposed to the psychic claims, but in the face of evidence, with a few exceptions, such as Dr. Edmonds, they yielded to the testimony of their own senses. There were a few examples of intolerance, such as Huxley's unhappy dictum, and Charles Bradlaugh's declaration that he would not even examine certain things because they were in the region of the impossible, but on the whole the teamwork of the subcommittees was excellent. There appears in the report of the Dialectical Society's committee a long article by Dr. Edmonds, an opponent to spiritualism, and to the findings of his colleagues. It is worth reading as typical of a certain class of mind. The worthy doctor, while imagining himself to be impartial, is really so absolutely prejudiced that the conceivable possibility of the phenomena being supernormal never is allowed to enter into his mind. When he sees one with his own eyes, his only question is, how was the trick done? If he cannot answer the question, he does not consider this to be in favor of some other explanation, but simply records that he cannot discover the trick. Thus his evidence, which is perfectly honest as to fact, records that a number of fresh flowers and fruits, still wet, fell upon the table, a phenomenon of apports which was shown many times by Mrs. Guppy. The doctor's only comment is that they must have been taken from the sideboard, although one would have imagined that a large basket of fruit upon the sideboard would have attracted attention, and he does not venture to say that he saw such an object. Again he was shut up with the Davenports in their cabinet and admits that he could make nothing of it, but, of course, it must be a conjuring trick. Then when he finds that mediums who perceive that his mental attitude is helpless refuse to sit with him again, he sets that down also as an evidence of their guilt. There is a certain type of scientific mind which is quite astute within its own subject and, outside it, is the most foolish and illogical thing upon earth. It was the misfortune of the Seabot Commission, which we will now discuss, that it was entirely composed of such people, with the exception of one spiritualist, a Mr. Hazard, who was co-opted by them and who had little chance of influencing their general atmosphere of obstruction. The circumstances in which the commission was appointed were these. A certain Henry Seabot, a citizen of Philadelphia, had left the sum of $60,000 for the purpose of founding a chair of philosophy at the University of Pennsylvania, with the condition that the said university should appoint a commission to make a thorough and impartial investigation of all systems of morals, religion, or philosophy which assumed to represent the truth, and particularly of modern spiritualism. The personnel of the body chosen is immaterial save that all were connected with the university, with Dr. Pepper, the provost of the university, as nominal chairman, Dr. Furness as acting chairman, and Professor Fullerton as secretary. in spite of the fact that the duty of the commission was to make a thorough and impartial investigation of modern spiritualism, the preliminary report coolly states the commission is composed of men whose days are already filled with duties which cannot be laid aside, and who are able, therefore, to devote but a small portion of their time to these investigations. The fact that the members were satisfied to start with this handicap shows how little they understood the nature of the work before them. Their failure, in the circumstances, was inevitable. The proceedings began in March, 1884, and a preliminary report, so-called, was issued in 1887. This report was, as it proved, the final one, for though it was reissued in 1920, there was no addition save a colorless preface of three paragraphs by a descendant of the former chairman. The gist of this report is that fraud on the one side and credulity on the other make up the whole of spiritualism, and that there was really nothing serious on which the committee could report. The whole long document is well worth reading by any student of psychic matters. The impression left upon the mind is that the various members of the commission were in their own limited way honestly endeavoring to get at the facts, but that their minds, like that of Dr. Edmonds, were so formed that when, in spite of their repellent and impossible attitude, some psychic happening did manage to break through their barriers, they would not for an instant consider the possibility that it was genuine, but simply passed it by as if it did not exist. Thus with Mrs. Foxgain they did get well mark traps, and are content with the thousand times disproved supposition that they came from inside her own body, and they pass without comment the fact that they received from her long messages, written swiftly in script, which could only be read when held to the looking glass, as it was from right to left. This swiftly written script contained an abstruse Latin sentence which would appear to be much above the capacity of the medium. All of this was unexplained and ignored. Again, in reporting upon Mrs. Lord, the commission got the direct voice, and also phosphorescent lights after the medium had been searched. We are informed that the medium kept up an almost continuous clapping of hands, and yet people at a distance from her seem to have been touched. The spirit in which the inquiry is approached may be judged from the remark of the acting chairman to W. M. Keeler, who was said to be a spirit photographer, that he would not be satisfied with less than a cherub on my head, one on each shoulder, and a full-blown angel on my breast. A spiritualist would be surprised indeed if an inquirer in so frivolous a mood should be favored with results. All through runs the fallacy that the medium is producing something as a conjurer does. Never for a moment do they seem to realize that the favor and assent of invisible operators may be essentially operators who may stoop to the humble-minded and shrink away from, or even make game of, the self-sufficient scoffer. While there were some results which may have been genuine, but which are brushed aside by the report, there were some episodes which must be painful to the spiritualist, but which nonetheless must be faced. The commission exposed obvious fraud in the case of the slate medium, Mrs. Patterson, and it is impossible to deny that the case against Slade is a substantial one. The latter days of this medium were admittedly under a cloud, and the powers which had once been so conspicuous may have been replaced by trickery. Dr. Furness goes the length of asserting that such trickery was actually admitted, but the anecdote as given in the report rather suggests chaff upon the part of the medium. That Dr. Slade should jovially beckon the doctor in from his open window, and should at once in reply to a facetious remark admit that his own whole life had been a swindle, is more than one can easily believe. There are some aspects in which the commissioner or some members of it are seen to have been disingenuous. Thus, they state at the beginning that they will rest their report upon their own labors and disregard the mass of material already available. In spite of this, they introduce a long and adverse report from their secretary upon the Zollner evidence in favor of Slade. This report is quite incorrect in itself, as is shown in the account of Zollner given in the chapter treating of Slade's experiences in Leipzig. It carefully suppresses the fact that the chief conjurer in Germany, after a considerable investigation, gave a certificate that Slade's phenomena were not trickery. On the other hand, when the testimony of a conjurer is against a spiritual explanation, as in the comments of Keller, It is given in full, with no knowledge, apparently, that in the case of another medium, Eglinton, this same Keller had declared the results to be beyond his art. At the opening of the report the Commission says, "We deemed ourselves fortunate at the outset in having as a counsellor the late Mr. Thomas R. Hazard, a personal friend of Mr. Siebert, and widely known throughout the land as an uncompromising spiritualist. Mr. Hazard evidently knew the importance of ensuring the right conditions and the right type of sitters for such an experimental investigation." Describing an interview he had with Mr. Siebert a few days before the latter's death, when he agreed to act as his representative, Mr. Hazard says he did so only with the full and distinct understanding that I should be permitted to prescribe the methods to be pursued in the investigation, designate the mediums to be consulted, and reject the attendance of any person or persons whose presence I deemed might conflict with the harmony and good order of the spirit circles. But this representative of Mr. Siebert seems to have been quietly ignored by the university. After the commission had been sitting for some time, Mr. Hazard was dissatisfied with some of its members and their methods. We find him writing as follows in the Philadelphia North American, May 18, 1885, presumably after vainly approaching the university authorities, without aiming to detract in the slightest degree from the unblemished moral character that attaches to each and every individual of the faculty, including the commission, in public esteem, nor to the high social and literary standing they occupy in society, I must say that through some strange infatuation, obliquity of judgment, or perversity of intellect, the trustees of the university have placed on the Commission for the Investigation of Modern Spiritualism, a majority of its members whose education, habit of thought, and prejudices so singularly disqualify them from making a thorough and impartial investigation of the subject which the trustees of the university are obligated both by contract and in honor to do, that had the object in view been to belittle and bring into discredit, hatred and general contempt the cause that I know the late Henry Siebert held nearest his heart and loved more than all else in the world beside, the trustees could scarcely have selected more suitable instruments for the object intended from all the denizens of Philadelphia than are the gentlemen who constitute a majority of the Siebert Commission. And this I repeat, not from any causes that affect their moral, social or literary standing in society, but simply because of their prejudices against the cause of spiritualism. He further advised the trustees to remove from the commission Messrs. Fullerton, Thompson, and Koenig. Mr. Hazard quoted Professor Fullerton as saying in a lecture before the Harvard University Club on March 3, 1885, "It is possible that the way mediums tell a person's history is by the process of thought transference, for every person who is thus told of these things goes to a medium thinking of the same points about which the medium talks. When a man has a cold he hears a buzzing noise in his ears, and an insane person constantly hears sounds which never occur. Perhaps, then, disease of mind or ear, or some strong emotion, may be the cause of a large number of spiritual phenomena." These words were spoken after the professor had served on the commission for more than 12 months. Mr. Hazard also quotes Dr. George A. Koenig's views, published in the Philadelphia Press, about a year after his appointment on the commission, "I must frankly admit that I am prepared to deny the truth of spiritualism as it is now popularly understood. It is my belief that all of the so-called mediums are humbugs without exception. I have never seen Slade perform any of his tricks, but, from the published descriptions, I have set him down as an impostor, the cleverest one of the lot. I do not think the commission view with much favor the examination of so-called spirit mediums. The wisest men are apt to be deceived. One man in an hour can invent more tricks than a wise man can solve in a year." Mr. Hazard learned from what he considered to be a reliable source, that Professor Robert E. Thompson was responsible for this view which appeared in Penn's Monthly of February, 1880. "Even if spiritualism be all that its champions claim for it, it has no importance for anyone who holds a Christian faith. The consideration and discussion of the subject is tampering with notions and condescending to discussions with which no Christian believer has any business. We have in these expressions of opinion a means of judging how unsuited these members of the commission were for making what Mr. Siebert asked for, a thorough and impartial investigation of the subject. An American spiritualist periodical, The Banner of Light, commenting on Mr. Hazard's communication, wrote, "So far as we have information, no notice was taken of Mr. Hazard's appeal, certainly no action was had, for the members above quoted remain on the commission to this day, and their names are appended to this preliminary report. Professor Fullerton, in fact, was and now is the secretary, 120 of the 150 pages of the volume before us are written by him, and exhibit that excessive lack of spiritual perception and knowledge of occult, and we might also say natural laws, which led him to inform an audience of Harvard students that when a man has a cold he hears a buzzing noise in his ears, that an insane person constantly hears sounds which never occur, and suggest to them that spiritual phenomena may proceed from such causes." The Banner of Light continues, "We consider that the Siebert Commission's failure to follow the counsel of Mr. Hazard, as it was plainly their duty to do, is the key to the entire failure of all their subsequent efforts. The paucity of phenomenal results, in any degree approaching what might be looked for, even by a skeptic, which this book records, is certainly remarkable. It is a report of what was not done, rather than that of what was. In the memoranda of proceedings at each session, as given by Professor Fullerton, there is plainly seen a studied effort to give prominence to everything that a superficial mind might deem proof of trickery on the part of the medium, and to conceal all that might be evidence of the truth of his claims. It is mentioned that when certain members of the commission were present, all phenomena ceased. This substantiates the correctness of Mr. Hazard's position, and there is no one who has had an experience with mediums sufficient to render his opinion of any value, who will not endorse it. The spirits knew what elements they had to deal with, they endeavored to eliminate those that rendered their experiments nugatory, they failed to do this through the ignorance, willfulness or prejudice of the commission, and the experiments failed, so the commission, very wise in its own conceit, decided that all was fraud." Light, in its notice of the report, says what needs saying as much now as in 1887, "We notice with some pleasure, though without any marked expectation of what may result from the pursuance of bad methods of investigation, that the Commission proposes to continue its quest with minds as sincerely and honestly open as heretofore to conviction. Since this is so, we presume to offer a few words of advice founded upon large experience. The investigation of these obscure phenomena is beset with difficulty, and any instructions that can be given are derived from a knowledge which is to a great extent empirical. But we know that prolonged and patient experiment with a properly constituted circle is a sine qua non. We know that all does not depend on the medium, but that a circle must be formed and varied from time to time experimentally, until the proper constituent elements are secured. What these elements may be we cannot tell the Siebert Commission. They must discover that for themselves. Let them make a study in the literature of spiritualism of the varied characteristics of mediumship before they proceed to personal experiment. And when they have done this, and perhaps when they have realized how easy it is so to conduct an examination of this nature as to arrive at negative results, they will be in a better position to devote intelligent and patient care to a study which can be profitably conducted in no other way." There is no doubt that the report of the Siebert Commission set back for the time the cause of psychic truth. Yet the real harm fell upon the learned institution which these gentlemen represented. In these days when ectoplasm, the physical basis of psychic phenomena, has been established beyond a shadow of doubt to all who examine the evidence, it is too late to pretend that there is nothing to be examined. There is now hardly a capital which has not its psychic research society a final comment upon the inference of the commission that there was no field for research. If the Siebert Commission had had the effect of Pennsylvania University heading this movement, and living up to the great tradition of Professor Hare, how proud would her final position have been. As Newton associated Cambridge with the law of gravitation, so Pennsylvania might have been linked to a far more important advance of human knowledge. It was left to several European centers of learning to share the honor among them. The remaining collective investigation is of less importance, since it deals only with a particular medium. This was conducted by the Institut General Psychologique in Paris. It consisted of three series of sittings with the famous Eusapia Palladino in the years 1905, 1906, and 1907, the total number of SA-copyright answers being 43.